The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Yay! We're live. It's the Weekend Podcast in my summer house. I'm here with, of course, Pete and Steve. You all right, lads?
Hello. Yeah.
I do apologise to everyone there. We're a bit late. Imran, Michael, Anthony, thanks for joining me. Imran, Roger, Phil, Roger M, Heidi, hello there. Yes, and we'll go through the comments. We will do more comments this time. Last time, we weren't expecting anyone to join us, so we didn't expect to get many comments, but we had quite a few people join us. So last night, we went out for a curry, and we were sitting there having a curry. Steve almost insists sometimes on mushroom rice. We don't know why that is. It costs an extra, couple of quid for a couple of mushrooms, Steve. You get ripped off of that, haven't you, really? And then we on the way to the curry house, we made fun of him a little bit, and then he ordered boiled rice. But then he said, all of a sudden, he said, oh, I've hit my stand-up target. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, what do you mean stand-up target, Steve? What are you talking about? And he's got his little self an iWatch. Mm. Do you remember him criticising the iWatch?
I said,
no, I don't need that nonsense.
Waste of time.
iWatches. Yeah. Absolute rubbish. Don't need it. So, Steve, you buckle. And now, like I said before, you didn't like Macs. You said you were the PCs. And I said, you love Macs, Steve. You're a geek. You should be into this. And now you got yourself a Mac. Mm. Got yourself an iWatch.
I only got the iWatch because my strap broke on my Fitbit, so...
And there's no other watch. There's no other watch you can buy.
And of course, straps are very expensive. They're about £400, aren't they? Mm. So it's easier and cheaper to just get an iWatch, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, welcome along, everyone, anyway. By all means, get involved with the chat. So what I want to do, first of all, start the chat off. I've done, as you know, 10 videos. I don't know if you've watched those, Steve. Have you seen those? 10 videos, 10 lessons.
How many have you watched now, Steve?
I think I'm up to about 5 or 6. I can't remember now, but I did stop after. Yeah.
Have you learned anything?
Yeah, I learned how to invest.
Okay, good.
That's 4 years after he started investing. That's good. But yeah, like I said, oh, by the way, that's Steve. He did have a graphic then, didn't you?
Yeah, I think we had problems with the graphics. So it was a little bit jumpy.
It was going a bit crazy.
Sorry. Okay. Some issues there.
So anyway, so I've done 10 videos called 10 Lessons I've Learned from Small Cap Investing. And I think, you know, making a mistake is good. That's how you learn, as long as you take it on board. So what I want to know from you guys and girls out there is, what have you learned? What lessons have you learned, especially in this market? It's a very tricky market, very hard market at the moment. And a lot of people I've seen give up, just leave and sell down. That's when you lose money, of course. When you sell, you lose money. You know, in this market, the entire market's going down. So what lessons have you learned? Please, type away on the side there.
Yeah.
And
couple in already, actually.
Go on.
Anthony says, yeah, everyone knows Justin's golden rule, never invest more than 100% of your money in one stock.
Anthony, I know you do overexpose yourself a heck of a lot, and you think this is the way to play it. It's not the way to play it. You will blow up your account. Anyway, if so, yeah, Imran wants to know, if so, what brand? No, Justin, do you use shampoo? Yeah, if so, what brand? I use Baldy Badgers. It's very good.
It's working.
Yes. One big mistake right there, Phil. One big mistake to knock you out. And what's your thoughts on the market? I'll go through some stats here. This is the market, okay? The S&P 500, which is the broad index in America, 500 stocks, has dipped in and out of it's in correction mode. Worst month since 2010, apparently. And in equities for US stocks, it's the worst since 2008. So if you've just started in the market, this is not what it's like normally. This is how you get your battle scars. This is how you learn. In these periods of time like this, where it's really hard, you learn. What's your thoughts, Pete, Steve, portfolio, what's your thoughts at the moment on the market?
Well, we're taking a bit of a battering, a bit of a spanking.
I'm talking about outside the bedroom department.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. What was the question? No. I mean, just because recently we had all-time highs in all of our portfolios, I think, which was lovely. That didn't last long.
Yeah.
And I'm now 20% off that now. So,
so you probably say the 20% knock.
Oh, yeah. In the last probably 2 weeks, is a bit like, whoa. And probably the gains for this year have kind of really, kind of disappeared.
So, that's in line with American markets.
My portfolio pretty much is the American market.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I kind of wish I'd kind of taken your advice a little bit and brought a bit more cash in beforehand and this happens, but yeah, you can't predict it, can you?
Looking back, though, it was a genius move by me, wasn't it?
Mm.
Do you remember a couple of podcasts ago? People were
testifying.
A couple of podcasts ago, about a month ago, I was saying I'm about 40% in cash.
Mm.
I think something's going to happen. In a downturn, good. Now I'm about 10% in cash.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but do you know what? Here's a simple rule. Any more things there? Yeah, what lessons have you learned? Get a typing on the thing there. But here's a simple rule, right? And this will stand you in good stead.
Yep.
And it's simple. It's so simple, Steve. Even you understand it. Right, so this is it. When your portfolio is at an all-time high, start selling. When your portfolio is at a low, start buying.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
So easy to say.
And that fits into the buy low, sell high strategy.
Yeah,
but we sit there on a big portfolio, think, hey, look at this portfolio is at an all-time high. And then we don't sell anything. We're just going higher and higher and higher.
Okay, but hold on. It happened so relatively quickly as well. It was an all-time high. And we're talking a
number of days. That's the market.
I know.
You can't sit there.
It has happened very quickly. So you're like, I probably would have, maybe start taking the profit. But I didn't even have a chance to do that. It started all kind of coming down. We had a couple of stocks that had big news stories that came in a bit negative, and that's kind of been the catalyst, doesn't it?
But first analogy of the day, all right?
We should have a sound effect.
The market, yes. The market is like a market, okay? You imagine...
wow, this is insightful.
You imagine a market, right, where you're sitting there next to your stall, all right, and you've got all your stuff in your stall, all your wares in your stall there, and it's going very well. Don't pay attention to the market at all. All of a sudden, Steve comes along, starts pinching from your stall. That's the kind of thing. You've got to pay attention to the market. It moves before you know it. The one pickpocket or the one Steve thief will tell his mates, it's a guy over there not paying attention at all to his stall.
Mm.
Just go along there and they'll just start stealing stock off you, you know? Is that a good analogy, Steve?
Steve?
Yeah.
You don't have to say that.
No.
Okay.
Right, my portfolio is down 35% in the last week. That's Scotty Pong. I love Scotty Pong. Scotty Pong.
Sorry to hear that,
That's
Scotty.
A very good name. I like that, Scotty Pong.
Yeah.
Just listen to Rick Rule's latest whilst waiting. Okay, and anything from the Amaretto, 1205. Interesting observation where he says that he's never invested in a Ross Beatty 10-bagger minor stock where it hasn't retraced at least 50% twice while he's had it.
Mm.
How very Asia Met. Exactly, yeah, you get a 10-bagger and you get some kind of retracement, I know, but it's surprised people. Obviously, Asian Met has surprised people a lot because that was like almost like the golden child of resource stocks on AIM for a while, Tony Manini, and it's come back from what to what? It's like gone from 12 pence, 14 pence, something.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's been kind of hovering around 9, 10p, hasn't it, for a long time, and then it's down.
What's that now?
6p. Okay.
Is it? 6p.
It came back up, but it did drop almost back to where it was, didn't it?
Yeah.
Again, it's taking 6.25 pence it is now at the moment, Asia Met. Yeah, but you know, you can still do well there. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like not to panic. And it will ride out. It's just there's a bit of a delay, isn't there? But let's see what happens with that one. And I think that's what I feel about a lot of my stocks. Yes, I've seen a hit on the portfolio, but there aren't any, I think, that are going to be disastrous. It's just going to be a case of riding out the storm.
Yeah, well, that's it. But the thing is, the reason why I was bearish a while back is because look how many things are compounding the markets here, worrying the markets. First of all, you've got Brexit. It's never ending. We are coming to the end of that, hopefully, unless they kick the can down the road further. But so you've got Brexit. Now you've got Italian debt, which is a big problem. And like, Italy's a big country. They can't just bail out Italy like they can bail out Greece out, you know? If Italy you know, could leave the EU, they probably would. So you've got trade tariffs, you know, China and Trump all the time. On top of that, you've got interest rates going up in America and the Trump on the back of the Fed. Trump appointed the guy to the Fed and now he's saying he's the biggest threat to the economy. And the Fed are acting very conservatively. They're doing what they should be doing, keeping a rein on inflation. And Trump is saying they are the biggest threat to the economy. So you've got all this playing out and you've got Jamal Khashoggi. I've seen the BBC. I've seen about 12 different pronunciations of Khashoggi with the Saudis now. There's a Saudi problem there.
Mm.
People are Saudi. Khashoggi, Khashoggi. Just call him Jamal. It's easier.
Mm.
So you've got all this. But how do you know when a bottom is in? Not in your pants.
Right.
In the market.
Ah.
And what do you reckon? How do you know? How can you tell when a bottom is in? I read this several times by lots of sort of previous gurus. How do you know when a bottom is in? Do you know when?
No. But there's probably some technical thing, isn't there?
Is there a way of really actually knowing?
Justin's about to tell us.
Yeah.
Well, here's one question for you. Just think about it, right? Trevor says, as Pete and Steve work full time, what are you talking about? What are they going to do?
Yeah, good point.
Trevor.
I'm with you, Trevor.
Any tips on how they do the research out of hours, please?
Steve.
Tricky.
Yeah, it is Steve. Steve.
What's the ticker?
Yeah, what's the ticker? That's Steve's research.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so Imran says, I use Stockopedia to research companies. Okay. This is how to know when the bottom's in, right? Yesterday, I was sitting there watching telly. I said, BT's. I've seen BT. It's a hammering. because the new CEO's come in. It's gone up from £2 to £2.40, £2.50 this week. They announced a new CEO is coming in, ex-World Pay guy, looks quite good. And then an interview with the chairman saying that, is he going to spin out Openreach? Now, Openreach, of course, it has to be distanced from them because they said BT has an unfair advantage in that area. Because if you've got a Sky customer and a BT customer complaining, the Openreach guys will probably go to BT first, you know? So they said, that's very unfair. And they got they're in charge of the whole copper network. So they said there's good value in spinning Openreach out, because if you spin a company out and list it in yourself, it raises a load of cash. That cash goes to BT. So they sell half the stock, 50% of the company in stock. So that cash goes to BT. They could pay off their pension debt, and that's why the share price was going up. So there's a good chance Openreach will be sold out. And then the chairman there put the blockers on it, said, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen at all. And the share price is just, literally, in the last 2 days, went 20%. It's ridiculous. No, about 15%, 10% of that. But anyway, this is when you know a bottom in the market is in, right? I was sitting there, I told this to Megan yesterday, and she picked me up from the train station, I was in London, but she complained all the way home about BT because it was falling off, saying, you're going to give me my money back, yeah? I said, you're going to give me all my money back? Said, yes, sell it now, just give me the rest. I said, no, 31st December, I'll give you the money back in BT. So she's got a no risk, you know, no reward.
And then 1st of January, she's filing for divorce.
But anyways, we sat there watching TV, right? And she was looking at the Sun online, and she went, "Marcus chaos, billions wiped off the oh great, billions wiped off the markets, brilliant, brilliant." She said that. That is when you know a market is in, at the bottom is in the market. When the mainstream press are talking about the markets, right, and someone who's not involved in the market is talking about the markets, it's when bottom is in. It's like in the big crash of 1929. You know, was it Herbert Hoover or something? One of the big guys in investing went up and shoe shined. And the shoe shine guy said to him, "What stocks are you in, Mr. Hoover?" And he thought, when the guy shining my shoes into stocks and shares, I'm getting out. And he went back, sold all, pretty much all his holdings, and the market crashed. Not because of him, because there's no more left to buy.
Yeah.
It's like, there's no more left to sell, the market goes up.
And we saw that with Bitcoin as well.
Someone just said that. It's like, he said on Twitter, said Richard said, it's like a bit when my missus said she'd heard about Bitcoin on the radio. We knew a top was in there, you know?
yeah.
And then someone else, and Jarvis said, yeah, a bit like when your nan started talking about Bitcoin. It's time to sell, you know? I thought, if my nan started talking about Bitcoin, that's a worry, because she's dead. Wow, she's come back from the death. Don't invest in Bitcoin. I think we're around the corner from a market up. So,
up.
Yeah, do Pete and Steve read... Trevor's really into you guys. Trevor says, do Pete and Steve read stuff like Investors Chronicle? Steve has never heard of that. Or do they feel the news is too late by the time they are published? Yeah. Investors Chronicle is a lot of the stocks they cover are too big. I've gone through, if you look at my lessons, honestly, the money stocks, the sweet spots generally are below 20.
Are too big for you, yes.
Too big for me, yeah.
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 Not too big, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Vincent Choi said, maybe it's a live stream issue, but the sound is crackling. Is that right, Steve?
That might be your ears.
Yeah, it could be the live stream. We've had a few problems this morning. It's not...
Technical guru. Yeah.
Technical difficulties, yes. Okay.
It's working fine before we came here, so I'm not sure. It's obviously, your summer house is causing issues.
Yeah, so...
As long as you can hear us.
Turn the heating down. It's really hot in here now. It is like a summer house.
Right.
What? Okay, lessons learned then. Did you say what your lesson learned was?
No. My lesson has been, I think, taking profits. I mean, that's an obvious one, but yeah, definitely. And also, because I had one, I've sold out of Valorix this week because my profit's there. And this is another thing, to go back to Trevor about working full-time, as myself and Steve do. just taking my eye off the ball a bit there, because I had a good chunk of profit in that, and I de-risked, and it was all fine. And I just taken my eye off, and it's kind of down there in the far reaches of my portfolio, and I haven't really watched it, and that profit has gone down and down and down this year, and I hadn't really spotted that.
Yeah.
I've sold out now, and I've still to take some profit because they had a very odd RNS, I thought, this week. Look at that and go, God, you know, I should have really sold months ago, really, but what am I doing?
A lot of stocks on AIM can dwindle. Literally, I just think sometimes you have to put through a quality filter. Look at Valorix. Look at the skin in the game the board have. Do they have big chunks of skin in the game? I mean big chunks, you know? I'm not talking about sort of, just under 1% as a sort of a token holding. But are they an owner of the company? Do they believe in the company? If they have plenty of skin in the game, they usually do, and they push harder. I never go for it when you hear a company saying, the CEO saying, this is an amazing project and all this stuff. They have no skin in the game. Think, why not? You are... And you're a corporate man. you are in this for money pretty much, and yet you're not investing in the company that you believe you're telling other people to buy stock in. Why? Doesn't make any sense, does it?
No.
If they can make money in it, they'll have money in it.
But the other thing with these stocks is that when you've seen good gains and you've de-risked and you might have taken a little bit of profit, the market cap still might be relatively quite small. And so there's still that kind of like, well, it could still keep going. And there's that kind of hope. Whereas you kind of look at it in the harsh light of day, kind of go, yeah, I should have just sort of like Asia Met, really, when it was 11, 12, you should have sold far more at that point. Hindsight, I know. Valorix, interesting. I did de-risk right at the top, as it turns out. But I shouldn't have just de-risked. I should have taken a good chunk of profit there. But anyway, that's kind of lessons learned. How do you avoid that next time?
Rob says that in this market at the moment, when earning good profit, sell.
Yeah.
If you don't, someone else will, and you will find that the stock you had profit in, and you know, sat in a loss. Yeah. Exactly.
But I think managing portfolio, and I think I've had too many stocks. I had over 20 stocks, and like I say, working full time and all of that. And like Trevor's saying, how do you do research? Yeah, it's hard. And finding new stocks to listen to the podcast and then like look into the individual stocks. But then you're still, I've got a limited amount of time I can actually dedicate it to it. And then Valorix is there dwindling away in the background. And I'm not noticing I'm actually losing a few quid there.
Yeah. Well, it's like the market situation, you know, it's like someone stealing stock of you in the market, you know.
That was a great analogy that you came up with. Yeah, good point.
John Merritt, I've heard the pirate is 20% down in HMI. All right, yeah. Please discuss GWMO, dirty situation. Phil, listen, all I know about GWMO, they're in America, they've got sort of copper assets. Great Western Mining, yeah. I've never liked it. I've looked at it over and over again, never been impressed by the drill results. Do you know what? Oddly, Tony Manini from Asia Met said to me a couple of times that a good project gets better. A bad project just gets worse. And they've never come out with convincing drill results in my mind. And literally, it dropped, I think, yesterday about 40%. It's been down anyway. It's down about 40% before that. But it dropped about 40% yesterday on the fact that they announced that they're going to suspend drilling, I think it was. Phil, paint is it, suspending drilling until March, I think it is. So obviously, the stock dropped off. And there's a couple of big holders in there. There's a guy on Twitter who's a big holder. Who talked it up quite a bit, and I've never been convinced by it. And a couple of people have put it to me. And do you know what I love about Twitter? I have stocks put to me every day, and people say, look at this, Justin. And people mention a couple of stocks, and Live Company Group, which I know you two guys are not in. At the moment, I need to have a conviction to tell you guys about it, you know? Say, this is what. Now, Live Company Group is going that way. I believe, I'll tell you about it. Do you know anything about Live Company Group?
No.
Okay, well, essentially, they're a live events company for kids based around Lego blocks, right?
Yeah. I saw your Diary of an Investor on it the other day.
Steve, he's not in any of my videos.
I've been busy.
Yeah.
I've barely got enough time for myself, let alone watching your videos.
Heidi says, actually, what do you guys do? You work for... She's surprised you actually work for a living. You're surprised someone would employ you. So what do you do?
Steve's a hooker. And,
Not very successful.
And you're his client.
Yeah, that's my job. Yeah. Yeah.
But what do you actually do? So Steve does audiovisual. That's why we're getting a lot of messing up here.
Yeah.
No. It's probably the broadband up here in the summer house. It's probably powerful enough. So Steve does audiovisual stuff.
Yeah.
And Peter?
I do digital marketing, SEO, search engine optimization stuff.
Heidi?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, unless you spend a lot of time, Andrew says, limit yourself to 10 or so stocks. Yeah, exactly. I'm sort of looking at stuff all the time, but even now. Anyway, Live Company Group, LVCG. What I like about this is that David came on the podcast. Now, first and foremost, he has 40% of the stock. It was 50% until a fundraise recently, so he's been diluted down. But so straight away, he's an owner of a company. I know that. That's his business, pretty much. You know, he's got shareholders, of course. But you think with a guy with 40% in the market, but like from Predator Oil and Gas, you know, Paul Griffiths there, he owns a big chunk. Now, he's going to act in the interest of shareholders, because he is a major shareholder, you know. If he does a massively discounted fundraise, it's going to hurt him a lot, you know, as it's going to hurt everyone else. So first of all, I like that. Second of all, it's kids' events. And I think kids' events, if we're going for a recession downturn, I think we are. We will have a massive rally, I think, in the year end. I think there'll be plenty of time to get out and sell some and sell down a bit. But I think towards 2019, 2020, I think we're going to a recession bear market. That's what I think is going to happen. So I just think kids' events... like that, a recession-proof to a certain extent, because they're specialist one-off events that you save up for, maybe parents, and take them along to it. Like there's one in the NEC in Birmingham. There's going to be several hundred thousand people visiting that.
I don't know about recession-proof, because people spend, the first thing they'll stop spending is on the fun stuff.
Not on those things once a month. Not on those things once a month.
Well, not when you've got the money you've got, Justin, but you know, other people.
But hang on, once a year, those things don't... And also, well, let me just say this, right? So what in the NEC, okay? They started, they relisted in December last year. So listed in December last year, the reverse ticket of this live event, and it's based around Lego, okay? Already, they're in 51 countries, right? They're doing events in 51 countries. Also in the biggest two countries in the world, in China, they're doing a tour like 20-odd cities, 26 cities in China. In America, they've just signed a deal with Live Nation, who are the biggest events company in the world, Live Nation, and the Dallas Cowboys, who I didn't realise are the biggest sports franchise in the world. The owner is like worth $7 billion. Now, not any company does deals like this, you know? Okay. And they're about 40 million market cap, that must say about 9%.
But I dispute your claim that it's recession-proof. I don't think that.
Well, I know, but when you're around the world, you are somewhat too much certain. Global recessions don't happen. They're not the kind of recession we look at now.
Yeah.
It's a bear market. Do you notice, let's be honest, did you really notice anything bad over the last... Did you get affected massively? Some people do, of course they do.
Yeah.
Businesses go through.
Well, it's like the negative equity on your house. Like, unless you need to sell, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If it's worth less, unless you can finance the loan and whatever, and you can pay your mortgage payments, you're okay. And you just ride out the storm and hopefully it will recover. It depends on your situation, is whether you get hit and you feel the pinch of the recession.
I also find the longer you've been doing investing, I think if this would have happened closer to the start, I think I probably would have been a little bit more panicky about it, but I think you kind of get used to it a little bit and you just expect it.
Yeah, like the negative equity thing, if you need the money out of your portfolio, then
on the 31st of December.
Yeah, well, yeah, good point to pay your wife. Yeah, you might get in trouble. Whereas if you've got money, I'm just riding out, that's fine. I don't need that money in the foreseeable future. That's why it's in there. I'm okay with it. So to answer your question, no, I didn't really notice the pinch of the recession.
I know. I think unless there's a major financial crisis, whereas doesn't happen. It happens once every 100 years, you know, or like a Wall Street crash where businesses go up and left. I think two quarters of negative GDP, which is what a recession is technically, that's just academic. It's a figure. People don't notice that. Okay, sales have slowed down. The turnover of the country has slowed down. People don't really notice that massively. It doesn't really... They're still in the same job, most people.
Yeah.
You're not laying off millions of people left, right and centre. Most people are still earning the same wage, saving the same amount, got the same mortgage, got the same outgoings, the same incomes.
Yeah.
So I just don't think it's affected. What I'm saying is, I also think they're quite protected just because of their geographical spread. So just because there's a GDP or recession in Britain doesn't mean there'll be one in China. In fact, the global recession in China didn't even touch them. The financial crash didn't touch their GDP. They're still turning over 7% expansion. So, and they're also in America. They're also in Argentina. They're also Japan. It's massive in the Far East. They're in Korea. So I like it. Listen, their valuation is quite high for the revenue at the moment, but I just think already within 6 months, they're a global brand. They've also turned over a small profit. This company's on AIM. We haven't turned over a profit in 10 years. So within 6 months of listing, they had a profit already. So, a small amount, but they had it. And what I like about it is, you'd think it's an events company. It's very expensive to set up, but they're like a franchise model. So the people in country sort all the events out.
Yeah.
They license out.
Yeah, that's beautifully scalable.
Yeah, amazingly scalable. Yeah, that's why they've done 51 countries in last. So I like it. It is 45 million. But I see this kind of company being taken out by someone. I just, doing this well. The fact it's got expanded so quickly means there's so much potential there. It's almost like the only problem they've got is the pace of expanse of growth. That's the only thing holding them back. They can go anywhere if they want to.
What makes them unique though over other?
Well, because they've got first mover advantage. I think now they've done it. They're in every market. Why go with the second? Right. It's like that when it's like the old right move, isn't it? All the ASOS. People keep saying, it's going to be the next right move or next ASOS. No, they won't, because that's out there. It's done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the first market advantage, market leader, the first guy to get up there. I missed a lot of comments there. So,
I've got one here from Stuart I thought was good. Predator, he says, is a perfect example of profit taking. 3.12 up to about 9p. I took profit until it went down to about 7. And yes, I totally agree. And we took profit. I took about 8p. And it's now down to 5.5p. But the thing is, and that falls into the thing I was talking about earlier, where that's still only a market cap of 5.5 million, 6 million. Your main man, Paul, owns 40% of the stock.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to... Yeah, I don't. If it rises up to 8, 9p, I don't want to take more. I want to... That potential there, where could it go to?
No, it'd be massive. Go on, Steve.
No, I was going to say, well, if you would have still been in the same situation when it arrives, would you have still sold knowing what the story was? You probably wouldn't have, would you?
No, I'd still
de-risk. I know you de-risk, but would you have taken more profit? That was what.
No. And,
exactly.
And even if it goes, hopefully now rises back up to 8, 9p in time or whatever, would I take more profit then? No, because that's still only an 8 or 9 million market cap, and the potential of that stock is who knows what. So, but then if we see a bigger downturn or something else happens, it crashes down to 4p, you're like, oh, I should have sold more at 9p. But it's always tricky, isn't it? I don't know how I'm hoping that one plays out for, you know, years to go, or months or years to come. Yeah. We see a good rise.
There's still massive potential with Predator Oil and Gas. Of course there is, because like I say, they own a gas field, you know, next to Corrib in the Irish Sea, which Shell sold 45% of for $1.2 billion, I think. Now, theirs is right next to that. They can use the same infrastructure. They've also got another one in Irish Sea, bigger than that. Ireland need gas, you know, to secure their future gas supply because of Brexit. They've also got a near-term cash generative asset in Trinidad with a CO2 enhanced oil recovery. But when I spoke to Paul, this is the deal. It was like Charlotte from Vox said, "Can you do an interview with a new guy, Paul, Predator Oil and Gas?" Never heard of them. I said, who's the Predator? Because they just IPO'd. And it was afternoon. I wanted to get up and do something. I said, "Yeah, go on then." I didn't have an interview the next day. Let's get him on. And so I reluctantly did the interview, right? And I was chatting to him, and I have, like I said, a cash model where I look at a research model. And as he was talking, my almost green flags were going up every time he said something, right? Mm. So first of all, the market cap was 2.35 million. They had 1.3 in cash. So this vehicle was valued at 1 million. That's all it was. So that's a listing, pretty much. That's the expertise of the board. That's all that, you know, that's your assets are not even valued there. And I thought, so he signed Jamie. Then he said to me, "Oh, yeah, I owned 40% of the stock." I said, right, green flag number two just gone up, you know? And then he said, "We got a near-term cash-generating asset from," and he said, "and I've secured the CO2 on the island of Trinidad, so no one else can do this. It's a proven technique." So I thought, okay, they've done a very clever deal there with securing that CO2. I said, you know, number three went up. And I looked into, and then I did the podcast, I went out, and I looked into the asset straight away, I thought it was a no-brainer. And just went in, I didn't even scale in, it just went in straight to, you know, big time for my sort of portfolio. It went straight in there, and I thought, this is a no-brainer. And of course, it went crazy, because it was superbly undervalued. And when it comes to it, even when you, like I said, I've always said this, haven't I? When you're looking to invest in a stock, it's not bad having the thought the recession's coming in the back of your mind, because you'd only buy stocks that you think are severely undervalued. And it's the overvalued stocks that get hammered in a downturn. And I'm not going to mention any names, but you've seen a tech stock recently get hammered in a downturn because people see it as overvalued, you know? And that's what happens. Now, if you don't want to see, you know, just look at companies, look at their assets, look at the cash they've got, the potential in those assets, and then value it. Do a back of the fag packet or whatever, just write them down. Even if it's a barrels of oil, say, okay, let's say if they be very conservative, even if they do $10 profit on the barrel of oil, how much is it going to generate? And I realize with, you know, Predator Oil and Gas, even on that CO2 production, which is the small asset and near term, that was worth 3 to 5 times the valuation of the company alone, depending on the profit margin of the barrels of oil. So, yeah. So even that one asset, it was multiples of their current share price. And so,
but even if I hadn't taken profit at 8p or 9p or whatever, and we're now back at 5.5, with that stock, you know, hopefully I'm proved right, I don't feel nervous. I'm hoping that will play out. And so even, and I've just seen Hyde says she's down in Predator. And if you are, personally, I wouldn't be too worried at this stage. It's a small market cap. I mean, if you're down, it means you've bought in at sort of 7p or 8p or something. The long-term potential is still there, isn't it?
We're also in a heck of a correction here at the moment. So you're going to be down. It's hard. This is when you're going to be down. Like I said, this is the time to buy. And when your portfolio is an all-time high, that's when it's time to sell. And I think, Heidi, when you bought Predator, you bought it on an up day. And I said, listen, buy on a down day, sell on an up day. Try and do simple adjustments like this to your trading or your investing. And it helps a lot. And then Heidi said, how do you know that? And I said, oh, okay, look at a chart. Here's a chart. And you put the candles on the chart. And the green candles are up days. And people said, well, there's not a lot of chance of Predator. It never comes down. And I pointed out, I said, listen, it's been up for, in the last 31 days, it's been up for 18 days, which is a lot. That's a lot. But you had 12 days or 13 days there of down days where you could have bought in. And I always say it's always good to do it. If you've got a company that's momentum is behind it, you can literally buy in on a down day and it'll be up the next day. You know, that's what can happen. Now, I did that with VRS, you know, Vizarin. You can buy on a down day. And it's, you know, I bought sort of like Live Company, and there's a great following for Live Company on Twitter. There's a lot of people, big fans of the company, and I know it had momentum with it, and it's gone up to like a quid and came back to 60 pence, and there was a replacing, and it's a level now that, right, that's quite good. I bought on a down day, and almost up the next day it was up, you know? And that's happened as well. I just bought some... I don't know if you... I wrote a blog about a year back on Stone Checker, or Flying Brands it was called, but Stone Checker was their only sort of company there. And I wrote a blog. It went up, made a little bit of profit, and I almost made a choice between that and feedback. And I went with feedback, which I'm glad, because feedback went nuts at one point and thing. But now I quite like the IQ, because they've got another part of the business. So it's basically software imagery. So it looks at kidney stones, Stone Checker, and IB, which is Imaging Biometrics, which they just brought in. It's Trevor Brown as well, owns like 23% of stock. But they've just bought that on, and it's about brain scans and all that stuff. And they've also done a deal recently. They just filed a patent. This is what I chatted to, I think it was not, is it... Nick Smith, who's the guy, the CEO on the podcast. I really liked him a lot. Nick Stevenson is part of Stone Checker, but he's also just bought some stock in the company. Yeah, elevate pitch. But I really like it because they filed a patent for contrast-free imaging. And this could be massive. No one else has done this. And basically, it gets rid of gadolinium. Gadolinium.
So what?
Gadolinium.
Right, what is it?
Well, it's basically an element that's not very...
Catalonium?
No, gadolinium.
Gadolinium.
That's right, yes. Yeah. So that's that. They file a patent for sort of imaging that doesn't use that, and that's not a very environmentally friendly element. It's a bit radioactive, I think. You know? But so small things going on
there.
We
should have a feature in the podcast where just Steve reads out elements.
Yeah. Director Sheryl. So what I like about this, they both bought some. So Nick Stevens, CEO of Stone Checkers, just bought $1.2 million. I said this to the thing. I look at shareholders. And David Smith, the CEO, David. I talked to David. I like David a lot. And it's almost like invest in people. I did a video on this. You didn't see this, did you? Did you see this?
When?
Invest in people.
Steve, haven't you seen that one? That's the best one.
Which number was that?
I haven't seen it.
It wasn't a lesson, Steve. Just doing diary of an investor. And I was, I was chatting to David, and he bought some shares. He's a CEO now of IQAI, right? There's two parts of this business now, Stone Checker and IB, which is brain but the imaging. It's basically AI. It's AI algorithms used in software. So it saves, you know, MRI scanners a lot of time, a lot of money to determine whether, you know, a certain operation will be effective or not go ahead with the operation. Because that saves a lot of money. If they do an operation, we couldn't have actually, you know, sorted that problem in it anyway. Because that's the kind of software they got. It'll save a lot of money, you know. But I like the fact they both bought a million shares. In fact, what I liked about it, David Smith bought a million at 2.48 pence. And then Nick Stevens bought 1.2 million at 2.5 pence. I said, David, you got a slightly cheaper price than your mate, didn't you? Yeah, I did. But he came across very well. He's got a very good track record. And I bought some stock just after speaking to him because I really liked him. Yeah. I really liked the product. And the same with David from Live Company Group. There's a couple of comments there. Craig, I felt the same about feedback. I didn't really want to sell because I felt it would come good, but I just feel my money is better in other stock whilst it's so cheap. Yeah,
well,
like
feedback, I got to like 80-90% up, and then it sort of crashed back down, and so now I'm at a bit of a loss at the moment. But they've announced the placing, which is everyone's been kind of waiting for, and let's see where we go from here.
I don't know what the market is. A lot of conspiracy and a lot of people talk about. I don't know how, when everyone knew they needed to raise funds, why the share price was going up.
Yeah.
Because it rallied towards that placing. I thought, well, how did that happen? I mean, some people say, I know what's happening there.
Yes,
but
who knows?
I don't know what happened, but it rallied. And I think Paddy had some stock. He said, what's your thoughts? I said, at the moment, their revenues are very small. And it's click-per-use revenue. So you don't get, like, sort of GE... You know, it was a massive company saying, right, we'll do a contract for 3 million. It doesn't happen like that. So essentially, their stuff is now in the cloud, I think, and the practitioners can click to use and they'll pay per use, you know, so it's not a massive amount they get. And their revenues are very small. I do believe there's potential there, but the fact they needed fundraise, and I think it's very odd that what happened with the CEO left, and there's nothing mentioned about that when he was doing quite well.
Yeah, that has been strange.
Actually,
talking to Paddy, he's just texting, actually. It's weird listening to a podcast without noise of Steve eating in the background.
I
am missing that, actually. Or just clacking it around with his pots and pans, or paint in the bathroom,
We actually had our bacon, not bacon, it was a sausage, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's the different sausages.
They're the thick ones,
the long ones.
Now, we knew you had them during the podcast, didn't we? They were a bit,
we did,
this morning, so... But, sorry, Paddy.
Okay, let's play follow, ladies and gentlemen on YouTube there. We're going to play follow or forget. So someone submitted a stock. You tell me whether you want to follow or forget, right? So first of all, I'm not going to tell you what company it is, first of all. Maybe some people guess. Someone's mentioned it on the timeline there. But okay, what do? They're an oil and gas exploration company, AIM quoted in assets, exploration assets in the Republic of Georgia. Steve, do you know where Georgia is?
In America.
Well, there is a Georgia.
There is a Georgia.
But it's not that Midnight Train of Georgia.
No, not
Gladys Knight and the Pips.
No.
So which one are you on about?
It's a country.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
I always find that funny, Gladys Knight and the Pips. You know, or John Bon Jovi. It's like, imagine John Bon Jovi and his mates. They've got a band, and they're trying to think of a name. And he just comes in one day, guys, got a good idea, a name for the band. What? Bon Jovi. That's your name, though, John. Yeah.
Yeah, we just do that.
Yeah. Guys, got a good idea for the band. What? Gladys Knight and the Pips. I'm a Pip, right? Yeah, you're one of the Pips. I'm Gladys Knight. Yeah. I can see this going one way, really. Yeah. You know?
What would it be if it was S3?
Yeah.
Martin.
Justin Waiton, the...
Yeah, and the blockheads.
Right.
Anyway, so market nice cap. Guys. Anyway, listen, oil and gas explosion in Georgia.
The
it's
country.
Russia, sort of near Russia. You know, right.
Yeah,
it's,
former Soviet state.
Market cap. This is interesting. 7 million. All right, 7 million market cap. How much are they lost in the last 6 months? Only just IPO'd in June, so they haven't had financial results out. What's the potential of the company's assets? So their fields hold an estimated net proven oil reserves of 1.5 million barrels and 61 million barrels unrisked. Contingent 2C. So you've got, so remember, reserves pretty much approved. They're there.
Yeah.
Resources, they're not proven yet. They're probably, they could be there. There's a good chance of them being there. So if it's 2C, it's like 50%, there's a chance of being there. But so they've got 1.5 million, you know, already. So you're thinking in your head, okay, 1.5 million. How would you work out the value of that, first and foremost? How would you do that?
Well, what's a barrel of oil worth?
Exactly. Mm. Well, don't worry about that. We'll just think of the profits. I always think it's in tens. It's a lot easier, isn't it?
Is it? Okay.
Well, let's say 1.5 million times 10 bucks. What's that?
No, 15 million.
Yeah. Mm. Is it? Yeah, 15 million.
1.5 times 10, 15.
That's proven.
Should we get a blackboard up?
That's proven yet. But 61 million barrels unrisked, because they can bring those into the reserves if they do a bit more drilling and all that stuff. And so first and foremost, you think that could be potential of marking up several times. Okay, how much cash do they have? They raise 5 million in June. After rig cost to date, 6 months from now, I would estimate 2-3 million pounds. Okay, what's the next significant milestone? Workovers, retesting of gas assets. Timing will be continuous with regular updates between now and the next 24 months. They're targeting, I think, 900 barrels of oil per day production, likely before year end 2018. I think that's a bit ambitious, but okay. Do the management have shares in the company? Are there any big holders? Yes. Roughly 30% in private investors, 1.6% in directors' hands, and the rest are in sticky institution hands. Sticky.
What does that mean?
Sticky. Well, if you've got let's say you've got some honey on your hand and a bee lands on it.
A bit of glue.
Can you get off?
Yeah.
You've got shears and sticky hands, so they're easy to get out of there.
Okay, right.
That's what you want. That's why, you know, a shear register with lots of, you know, directors holding them is good. They're called sticky hands. They don't just sell them.
Why it's quite hard to buy in volume sometimes, isn't it?
Exactly. They don't just sell like a dirty trader, like you dirty trader, Steve.
Yeah.
So, what you want in a stock is a lot of buying. I'd say, Europa Metals suffer with that a bit. A lot of trading going on. You know, there's no management that holds a big chunk of stock. Scoping study coming up very soon. They're now just 6 million market cap. I think their NPV in the scoping study could be around about 150, 200 million, maybe more than that. They're in Spain. Nice jurisdiction. So it's going to happen sooner or later. And people lost interest in the stock a bit. But I think if the management had like a 20% interest in it, I just think the share price would be a lot more secure. It does go up and down a bit. That's because traders are trading it. Which is annoying. Anyway, sticky hands. Amati, who have a track record of producing three-figure percentage returns on investments, they hold some stock, apparently. The total invested by Amati is 1.5 million, and they are confident, potential, and excited to get involved in such a rare opportunity. Is there anything else you'd like to say about the company? Please let us know. I've asked all major shareholders what made them invest in this company. They all gave the same response. It's undervalued based on the assets of which they have a variety, including production and exploration. They are confident the dilution will be minimal, as the upscale of production will enable the relatively cheap work required to increase production. So the production targets have been considered conservative by all major holders. Detailed analysis saying three times... So three times initial for 900 barrels a day. My own conclusions, I like this, based on the data available from other companies drilling, is that 2,000 barrels a day is a reasonable target. I like that. As an investor, people are always a bit biased there. My own conservative... rarely do you get someone invested in a company doing their own conservative analysis. But you've got to... Otherwise, you're cheating yourself. If you don't be conservative on your targets, you're cheating yourself, honestly. Market cap, 7 million. There's a risk of ineffective completion. There's a risk of failed gas exploration. There's a risk of Russian interference if they land grab. The company is fully funded. I quite like that bit. And are currently confident they are aware that all the costs will be incurred in the next 6 to 12 months. So, there's 7 million market cap. Potential, say, 1,900 barrels a day.
Yeah.
They've got funded. What do you say, Peter? Follow or forget?
On what we've heard, I'd say follow, definitely.
Follow or forget, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Steve.
I'm not just copying, but I'm going to follow as well.
Okay, well, someone did ask me, said, can you do something on Bloe? And that's B-L-O-E. That is the company, Block Energy. It's in Georgia. I've had Paul on the podcast several times. I do think it looks quite good at this level, but again, you know, do your own research. That's Block. Follow, so you say follow. OEX follow. Blow, yeah. Frontera is in Georgia, yeah. Heidi, I know you like Frontera, FRR. It's a bit bigger market cap for me, you know?
Sorry, I'm lost. So which is what's the company we're talking about? We haven't mentioned them yet.
That was Block Technology. Ticker for that is Blow.
Right.
B-L-O-E.
Was Block already taken?
I think Block, yeah, because I thought when they first came on, they only IPO'd in June, I thought it was something to do Block Technology, blockchain.
Right.
Blockchain.
Blockchain.
What do you think of blockchain? Steve, are you now into it? When we first brought up blockchain, you hadn't heard of it, did you?
Had I not?
I don't know, I think so, didn't you?
A while back. Well, you've got to find out about things one way or another, I guess, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very aware of it now, and I wouldn't touch it, yeah.
What? It's the future. So going back to this, are you going to follow, Justin? Are you following?
I do follow Block Technology, yes.
Okay.
Block Energy.
Block
yes.
Energy, sorry.
Anthony, you're right. Anthony said, Anthony has submitted that. You're on there. So it's my analysis, LOL, and isn't conservative. Okay. See you on the LSE, Anthony, after this reference. I'm not on the LSE. There's arguments going on here. follow, yeah.
You're on the LSD.
Follow, Nigel's following here. Yeah, so, okay, cool. That's Block Energy there. Marvellous. Any news coming out? So, I don't know. We sort of touched on AI, which I think is, you know, 3 million market cap, you know? And I think the potential there is big. They've recently got funded. Look at all these things. There's manager Trevor Brown's got skin in the game, 26%. The two directors, David, the CEO, just bought some.
Yeah.
The CEO of one of the subsidiaries, Stone Checker, just bought some. So, they've got a bit of skin in the game. It's not a massive amount from the CEO and the CEO of the Stone Checker. But, you know, 23% sold by Trevor. And he is knocking costs down.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Is he completely out of feedback now?
Yeah, I think so. Right. Trevor Brown selling down.
Yeah.
So, what's been annoying this week is totally.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
Totally.
Do you know my lesson? What did you come up with the lesson?
Oh, yeah, Steve, what's your lesson?
A lesson you've learned in the markets of late.
French.
Is this one I've already said?
I don't know. Have you learned any lessons?
I don't know. You said that as if it was something I've done before and I just need to recap of this lesson.
I can't remember if earlier you said a lesson.
Oh, right. Okay.
I gave my thing about...
Steve, are we trying to remember what you've said? Because you can't remember it.
Yeah.
I know.
We should write it down.
Have you got any lessons you've learned from the market, Steve?
Can anyone comment? Because we can't remember. Did Steve give us a lesson? I can't remember if you did. Have you learned anything, Steve?
Just know what the ticker is, I think.
Get asking Justin.
You've got to get that right. That's essential.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
true. Essential, yeah.
Because you've got that wrong before.
also, working out how many shares there are to the thing, which I know Harry and Larry, sometimes you get confused on when you're trying to...
Okay, you don't end up buying 45p.
Pence a couple of times,
bought £1 or £2 worth of shares.
Yeah.
And all the other way around.
It cost you 15 quid.
Yeah.
What's gutting? Do you know what's funny? This is what's funny. We were talking about Asia Met, actually, recently. I think we were setting up the stuff, Steve, but we said, isn't it odd? Like, almost like 2 or 3 months back, we were saying, I wish I'd gone bigger in Asia Met. I wish I'd not de-risked in Asia Met. You know?
Yeah.
And now you're thinking, I'm glad I de-risked in Asia Met.
Yeah.
Because that's what can happen. You know, that's why small caps is exploration still are very risky. You know, there's nothing more risky than exploration in a foreign country, you know, small caps. That's very risky. There's many, many institutional investors. In fact, this brings us on to totally quite nicely. But there's many institutional investors will not invest in small cap stocks because they're too risky. Full stop. And, you know, and this is what's happened with Totally, you know, I've been sold down massively. I did a spreadsheet, I went through about 3 months worth of holdings on the RNSs recently, and I see that they are nearly out. They announced a trading update, it was very positive, which I talked about in the week. You know, revenue's going up, costs coming down, and also they mentioned some of the major shareholders are now below 3%, so not a lot less to sell. They mentioned, I think, four companies in their release, but Legal & General's still in there. There's three arms to Legal & General. There's unit managers, assurance, and there's something else. But Legal & General still have around about 5%, I think. So there's still selling going on there. And this is getting hammered. But I do believe once the selling leaves the stock, it will fly. But this is what comes into it. This is my lesson. Patience.
Yeah.
When you find a stock and you really like it, it's so easy to jump in without doing full research, you know, thinking it's going to, and on AIM, I understand why that happens, because fear of missing out, the share price could spike and go crazy overnight. But do you know what? Sometimes you're better off. It's like, at the moment, there's a company called Bidstack. I love the technology. You love the technology. Let me tell you about Bidstack, right? A couple of guys who I respect, who are good investors, have been telling me about it all the time.
What's the ticker?
It's a tech, Bids.
The ticker is Bids.
Bids, yeah. Bidstack.
Write that down.
Listen to this, Steve. This is good tech. It's only just listed, right? First of all, Anne Golag, who's Stagecoach billionaire, heiress, she's got 3% in the company, right? I don't know why, what she has to do with gaming, but the guy's in it, old stock as well. The guy's in it, hold a lot of stock, so it's good. So just launched, they've got cash, everything. Now, they insert ads, non-disruptive ads, into games. And they are a platform. So basically, it's like a an advertising platform that people just fill your ad and they'll put it in there. And so it's non
product placement.
Well, no. So for example, Football Manager 2018. Have you ever heard of that, Football Manager?
Yeah.
So it's a pitch, obviously a football pitch of that. And you know, on real football pitches, you have LED sort of boards around the side.
Yeah.
They can actually populate that with your adverts. Yeah. And anyone can bid for that space.
Okay.
So literally, it's non-disruptive to the game.
You mean FIFA?
What?
Not a Football Manager. Football
Manager as well, isn't there? But there was the hook that was, you say, I'm not a gamer. Are you a gamer?
No. So does that work? I don't really understand how games... So is it played online so you could constantly change
it? Yeah, it's online. Yeah, so it's dynamic, updated advertisers. Okay. So if you've got a campaign starting tomorrow, so say there's a massive online Football Manager tournament going on, you know? And the big brands, there is more spending gamer, I didn't realize, than music and film industry combined.
Yeah.
So the gaming industry dwarfs filming and music now, you know? It's a massive industry. It's tech. So they are apparently, I don't know about this, but some of the guys said, no one else has this tech. And it's very good. The perspective is nice. It looks like it's on the barriers going around, like a proper advert. So they're valued about 11 million. I think they raised, I don't know how much money they raised, but people are saying to me, get involved now. It's going to go mad. It's going to be EVRH. It's going to go, but it'll be sustained because the industry is massive. Unlike VR, watching VR through music, I don't think it's a big market for that. But gaming, we know, is a massive industry.
When did Bids float?
Bids floated, I don't know why I'm talking it up. Well, I'll tell you why I'm talking it up. I don't own any stock.
Okay.
But this is my thought on patience, right? I've said to the guys, I want to see, they've not released anything, news-wise.
Right.
But there's been a lot of talk about
said
them.
Said to the guys, what, at Bids?
No, but obviously you can go to the website and you can go through their prospectus and all that stuff.
So also, how many games do they have then?
I don't know. I've not done a lot of research, Steve. You're undercovering my weaknesses. So they did propose acquisition, Bidstack placement. So they raised money. What did you ask?
When do they float?
Oh, so they floated in August. They're 11 million market cap, right? And I've looked at their prospectus, and their revenue was minuscule the last year, okay? Because now they've used this ramp up and so. So I know with tech companies, what happens is sometimes, and this may not happen, but I know with tech companies, when the revenue comes in, the share price takes a knock. Because you have the revenue, and that's why I like investing in companies that have potential, but have no revenue.
Yep.
Because you've got nothing to value it against. All you see are the potential of the assets. So like I said, Predator Oil and Gas, for example, the assets can be massive. But when you've got a tech company, for example, like you've got EVRH, right? And people say, oh, it's going to be massive, the VR, massive space, and all this, and they got no revenue. Okay, it can be. No one really knows. So just and they start signing these collaborations and all these deals. It goes like crazy, you know? And all of a sudden, then they start monetizing it. And they turn over like a couple of grand. They go, well, hang on. That's the valuation of that potential. It's worth a couple of grand. So I just think, with this Bids at the moment, I think it could be massive. I really do. I like the platform they got. Apparently, no one's got this kind of platform. It's dynamic, non-disruptive ad insertion in online games. It could be massive, you know?
See, my only suspicion on that is unless they've unless they've got contracts with all these games.
They've got contract with Sega. They've got contract with them.
Otherwise, what's stopping hang the games on, going on, off and doing it themselves?
No, hang on, I'll tell you. No, they are in with big guys. Let me just look there. Esports.
EA Sports, you mean?
Yeah.
Come on, Grandad.
I don't know.
So what I can do here is say, do your own research. What's the ticker?
Yeah, he has done that now. He's
asked. Yeah, someone sent me a document yesterday. Very well done. And but listen, what I'm saying is there's massive potential because the industry is massive, you know. And there's at the moment there's no way of sort of directly advertising these people who are gaming non-stop. You know, how do you do it? Okay, you can put an advert in when you start the game, maybe, and at the end, but within the game, you know, for other people watching, you know, so the potential is there. But what I'm saying is, will it fall when they post their first set of results on the revenue they've earned? Because they've just started, you know, they've just started. So I'm waiting for that. And what I'm saying by that, I'm happy to miss out on a spike. Because if you watch most spikes, they come back. Most spikes is very, very rarely. And also, when you get a spike, that's when you should look at the potential of the company. Okay, whenever the company spikes, look at why it spiked. Is there substance behind the spike? Because it will come back, because they won't release news day after day after day.
No.
It'll be news-free for a while. So once you get that news land, that's de-risked it, because the share price has gone up, let it go for a while.
Yeah.
It de-risked it, because it's proven the concept a bit further. So that's what with the companies. Sit back for a while, rather than guess what the news is coming out, let the news come out.
Yeah.
Read it, let it de-risk the project a bit, and it'll come back. And there's
another lesson I've learned is definitely that is no matter how good the potential, if that rise has already happened, you've just got to walk away. You can't get involved. You've missed the boat. That's why I really feel that. Predator, you know, we're buying it 2-3p, whatever. That's the time to get in. Once you got to 7 or 8p, even though there's massive potential there and it could go on and on and on, you've got to say, no, I've missed that. There'll be another one along. I'm out of that. I didn't get in. I have to accept that.
Or wait for the dip, Pete.
No, but there's always a dip.
Then wait for the dip.
Predator Oil and Gas is one of the most aggressive price-free rates I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
There was opportunity, 12 days of opportunity to get in there.
Yeah.
On a down day, you know. Any thoughts? Mike, Totally PLC, if you have 9 million plus cash, but the liabilities are bigger, what would that not bother you? Let me tell you, there's different current liabilities and non-current liabilities, right? Or current assets, non-current assets. So that's on the balance sheet or financial position. Current assets are things that come into you that you have on the balance sheet, the liquid within 12 months. Current liabilities you have to pay off within 12 months, all right? So the way it totally works is this. And I actually contacted the financial director of this. I said, listen, I've been looking at the last financial statement. You are net current. You have net current liabilities. That means you have more going out than you have coming in.
Yeah.
Even with that 10 million in cash. So they had trade receivables. Anyway, it was basically came down to this. Their net current assets were 20 million. Their net current liabilities were 21.8 million. So that means they are 1.8 million in the hole, right? So people say, oh, hang on, so that cash doesn't mean anything. No, it's not. I did ask them about this. I said, why is it like this? It's very usual in our business to have this, because what happens is we get GPs invoicing us because they work in the NHS on a two-weekly basis. So you get every 2 weeks, you get a GP invoicing them, you know,
mm-hmm.
for all the work they've done. They get paid by the NHS on a monthly basis. So you can see almost they get double the amount of bills coming in. Because the NHS is not unusual to have a net current liability because they said, you know, but because the NHS is a good payer, of course they are. If the NHS wasn't a good payer, who would be, you know? But we don't worry about that too much. But also, they will be paying those liabilities down. They will be generating more cash. Their operating margins are going up, so they are generating more cash. They'll have more cash. They'll pay off those receivables. They're a business in, I think, you know, in transformation. It's only 1.2 million of net current liabilities, Mike. It's not, you know, 9 million in the hole. Check out the balance sheet there. And it's a transformational business. Look at that trading update they did this week. I'm very encouraged by that. Every pretty much paragraph is very positive. And they said when they took over Voke, which is a transformational company for them, there was inefficiencies there and there was operational problems there where they had the regulator come in and say, you need to tidy this up. And they've done that. They've done it. They've made it more efficient. They've made it operationally better. So they're cutting their costs down. They've won £10 million worth of new contracts since year end. it's going in the right direction in my field. It's valued at 10 million, this company. Yeah. That's all. They've done 10 million new contracts in the last 6 months.
I still think it could be a while.
It'll be a while.
Before we see any great move in the share price.
Well, they say, the two brokers, upwards. The most conservative broker said they'll be profitable in 2021. They've just had they've already reported 2018 figures. So
yeah.
We're talking, it's 2019, in 2019, or almost next year, March next year, 2019, they'll report.
Yeah.
It's a year after. So they're heading towards profitability.
One company we haven't mentioned, and they're going to release their scope and study results, or scope and study, feasibility study, on Monday, is Horizonte.
Yes.
Horizonte Minerals.
I like that.
Are you in that, Steve?
Horizonte.
Yes.
It doesn't sound
convinced. No, I sold a few stocks last week and I can't remember if that was one of them.
Okay. Well, you're just picking them.
Yeah.
I'll sell that.
Isn't it so easy to sell on down days, though, on down markets? When we should be doing the opposite, guys.
Yeah.
Why can we get this? People say the oldest adage, buy low, sell high.
Yeah.
But we can't. This is simple as this. When your portfolio is an all-time high, sell. Start scaling out. That's it. That's a sign. That's all you need. When your portfolio is all-time low, start buying. If you've got cash, if you sold, that's how to crack it. That's as simple as that. Get that in your head. It's not going
to
go higher. Not an all-time high, I'm saying.
Yeah, an all-time high. Mm. Yeah, so on a down day when there's profit there, you're going to sell, aren't you? If you're if you've got a reason that you're thinking,
you need the cash, yeah.
Well, yeah, and you're just like
that's the wrong way to say it. So everyone's rushing to the door at the same time.
Okay, but my example of Alaric, that hasn't had many up days this year, and it's just been going down. But at some point, I should have taken profit. I should have, even though it's a down day, I should have taken profit because
no, don't do it on the down day.
Well, it's a percent here and there, isn't it?
No, because when those days when you get a stock do a rally like that, right? Those days when the volume is off the charts, you're in double digit percentage gains. That's the day to sell. And that's hard because you think this could happen tomorrow.
What if they don't come?
They do. They did in Valorix. You did a 5-bagger in that.
Yeah.
You did, and you took about a bagger out of it, didn't you? If that. Yeah. Well, that's it. If you were, as I said to you earlier, if you're in a normal business, like you're running a hairdresser's, normal businesses, what's the operating margin there? The margin's like 10, 20%, something like that. High street business, even less than that. Tesco's runs on less than 5%. If you are doing several 100% in a month or so.
Yeah.
You've got to laugh your head off and take some money off. Yeah. That is exceptional.
Why are you shouting?
Because people are saying AIM is very risky, it's very rewardy. And if you get lots of rewardies, take them off the table. But sell on an update. When you get one of those updates, it goes crazy. The volume's through the roof. You're in double digits. Take some off the table.
I think
that's when the market makers are throwing cash at you.
Hold on.
They're saying, here you are, have some shares. We want to buy your shares.
I think I've done this before, and you're like, what are you selling that for?
So my point is, say you're 100% up in the stock, 200% up in the stock. It's fantastic. And then it starts to start drifting down, and for no particular reason, but they're down 8% one day.
You should have sold before then.
I've de-risked, but I haven't taken profit. So then all you're seeing is profit going down. And what are you doing? What, another 8% day? Another day? Oh, I'll wait for the up day. And it's gone down about 20%. And then, there's a massive up day and it goes up 5%. Well, you still sort of sold up here when it,
when it doubles, just sell half. Doubles again, sell half.
It doesn't go like that always, does it?
It doesn't go straight down. No, I know, but you've got to keep de-risking all the way up. I just honestly see when you double something. No, when you double on something. Right, okay. No, it doesn't. But what you say? You're in the mentality of only wanting to sell when you're losing profit. You should be selling when you're making profit. So listen.
Okay, but if I haven't,
imagine your old shit. No, but it doesn't matter if you haven't. Get into that mentality because you imagine the old pit arena of the stocks and shares arena. Imagine in the stock exchange where there used to be people. Have you seen Trading Places?
Yeah,
right?
Love that film.
When a stock is going up like crazy, right?
Pork bellies.
You are standing there with the shares that people want, right? Yeah. They're going beep 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 beep, and you go, no, I don't sell. I don't sell. It's going to the moon. Beep beep, come on, buy it for you. That's what I'm saying. I'll buy it off you. Beep 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 beep.
Wow. This is a new preach from you.
Yeah.
So
they're saying that, right? That's another double digit day when the volume's going crazy. That's when you should be selling some, right? Then, next day, the share price is down. The pack of people there, so they're back to you. And you're like, excuse me.
Okay.
Excuse me.
All right.
Do you want to buy my shares? Says what? Do you want to buy my shares? No, I'm going down. Yesterday was a day.
Yeah.
What? I didn't want to sell yesterday. I want to sell now. No.
Yeah, you missed. You missed out.
Yeah.
Right. But, okay, so I've missed out. But then when do I sell?
You do not miss out. You just get that in your head. That's the lesson.
But you can't always. And because we're busy working, we might miss that type of opportunity.
Well, you've got the Vox Markets app. You just flick it on.
Yeah, it's not
every,
like that.
Every now again.
I'm in the middle of a meeting at work, and then pops. Oh, sorry, guys. I've got to go and sell some stock.
Yes.
Right. Sorry.
It's not as easy as you think. When you're working.
You
and so other people have said this as well. It's not just you.
Back us up, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, what do you really do?
I've got to do that, otherwise you're looking at it.
What do you really do? Just say, you know, guys, it's a crazy update. Sal! What do I think of the old the olas in the Weald Basin? Listen, I had a cracking run of Angus Energy. It was a five bagger for me. It's the last IPO I took, last IPO I got involved with. I bought it 6 pence. I sold at 30 pence. I don't know why. I just looked at the valuation of the company. I looked at the potential of their all assets. I thought, this is now overvalued. And I just got out. So I haven't looked back. Because I think I look at market caps. I look at the. It comes down. Why do you look at market caps? Simple as this. It's the valuation of the company. That's what the company is valued at. What can those assets generate? Can they? How much? I mean, more times can it, you know, generate more value in the company? So always look at the market cap of a company. Look at the valuation of the company. What can their assets generate beyond that? So can they generate 10 times that value? If they can't, I'm genuinely not interested, you know? And I don't know where UK oil and gas is at the moment, and I don't know what the potential is for that. I know there's a lot of hype. I don't really know the facts. How much are they producing? Please tell me. Any UK oil and gas people out there, how much are they producing? What's the potential for them to produce? So that now, pretty much a 70 million market cap. If you do the maths on that, how many barrels of oil in profit it takes just to support that valuation? It's quite a lot, you know? That's why I like to look at smaller market caps. So I don't know. I'm not researching it. If you can tell me how much they do that, I don't know.
Phil says, shout a bit louder, Justin. There's no need for a mic. I can hear from here.
Anthony, Nigel, PHE, long hold. Yeah, I like the tech there a lot.
Justin gets so wound up by Peter, yep.
Anthony Wintle, some of the pro gamers get paid more than footballers. I didn't know that. Wow. And yeah, unbelievable. What are your thoughts on gold? I like gold. Gold is where it's at now. Did you see Hummingbird? So let me just get something up here. Hummingbird, right, who are a major shareholder of Cora. I like Cora.
Yeah.
Hummingbird's big as well. But this is what I'm saying about potential. I wrote this to one of the blog writers on Vox. So Hummingbird Resources, they're in Mali, they produce gold, right?
Yep.
Their target is about 100,000 ounces a year. Their all-in costs, this is what I say, do the back of the maths, back of the fact, back of, their all-in costs for producing that gold, I mean, it's getting out of the ground, everything costs $700, right? Average price to sell that for is $1,200, a bit higher than that.
Mm.
So clearing $500 profit, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So So we are. So here we are. Raising season in Mali. They still sold 20,000 ounces for Q3, 38,000 ounces in Q2, and 11,000 or close to 12,000 in Q1, where they were ramping up production, starting production. That equals 70,000 ounces. Their all-in costs just below $7. So that means they will make free cash flow for pretty much $37 million. They have $20 million in the bank. So that there is what, 37. That's that their 1 year of production, pretty much in their cash. It's not far off their valuation. They've also got another asset, which is a potential 4 million ounce of gold, and it's showing an NPV of 186 million. So they've had a bad year, and in those three quarters, not even the fourth quarter yet, their 1 year of production plus their cash is pretty much worth, you know, their market cap. They're a gold, but I love gold at the moment. I just think, honestly, in the next year or so, when the stock markets tumble, when a bear case.
Yeah, head in a handcuff.
It's a nice case. It's very fairy. But when we hit the bear market, we hit a recession, gold will spike. You've seen it recently. Gold is starting to spike in those volatile days. Go always have a bit of gold in your puff. You know, they always have a good bit of gold in there.
Perth.
I like Cora. Taking a massive hit of late.
Cora going to need funding, are they?
Well, listen, the rule is like this. If a company IPOs, they generally list on the stock market, they have about 12, 18 months worth of cash. They don't want to over-dilute at the start, right? But they've got about 12 months. They're very careful with their money. They're going to need to raise sooner or later. I don't know where it is.
Some sticky holders.
Yeah, they're massive sticky holders. And I don't think they have any problem raising funds because the people who are big holders in Cora, have deep pockets, and they've bought the shares in the open market. So I don't think they'll have a problem raising money. I like Cora a lot. I think it'll be up where Hummingbird's valuation is in about 2-3 years' time. But Hummingbird also own. But like I said, gold. I love gold. Whoever asked that, yes. Now is the time to take advantage of gold. In fact, a couple of weeks back, when no one was talking about gold, that's when to buy. And again, stocks that are talked about and shouted about.
I want to buy more Cora, because I think that's... Yes. I need to average down. But if there's going to be a placing, you know, I'm holding back, or... Should I be buying a little bit now, scaling in, waiting for this placing?
Yeah, I mean...
Are you going to answer that question?
Someone just said to me...
I'll ask Steve. Shall I go into
Who was
now?
It?
Mixed messages. I'm trying to get into cash, so...
Okay.
Yeah. No, this is the time to buy.
Average down
This is the time to buy. You are selling now. This is the time... You are on the Titanic rushing for the door. You should be on the life raft going, I saw the iceberg coming miles off! Did anyone else see the iceberg?
So
I saw that miles off.
Some of the ones I've sold, I've sold in profit. So, okay, I've sold a little bit on down day, but then I can use that money to invest otherwise, or keep in cash for when it goes even lower, if that recession does eventually kick in. So,
Can I just apologise to anyone watching this with a hangover? Because having Justin shout at you on a Saturday morning must be quite intense.
Okay, Alan contacted me on Twitter, said...
Alan?
He said, Cora's price, if it responds to the bad news from Hum. I said, don't think it will, because Cora are not drilling. They weren't drilling in the rainy season. They did all the drilling before the rainy season, and they got the results out, they'll start again drilling after the rainy season. And he said, I really like them. I said, yeah, I really like them. And he said, listen, it's getting very cheap. Cora is getting very cheap. They're about $5 million market cap. They're very careful with their money. Dr. John Foster is a geologist. He's not a salesman, CEO. Flash Harry, he's not. He's about geology. He knows his stuff.
John
right?
Farmer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it John Farmer?
CEO is John Foster. One of the big investors is Lord Farmer.
Farmer. Right.
But I said, listen, they're very careful with their money, but if I were you, I'd wait for a placing. I don't know when it's going to happen. It may not happen very soon. You may have to have a bit of patience. That companies like this tend to go on longer than you expect them to. But to be safe, wait for a placing, then get in, because they've got cash to carry on for another 6-12 months. And I think, you know, they've got an amazing asset in San Ancoro, and Tecla Duca can still be, you know, viable. They just truck the ore down to Hummingbird and get it processed there. And they got 15 targets. You know, it's a $5 million market cap. It's a good team. Look at the people backing that team. How long have we been on for? Have we been on for a long time?
Yeah, about an hour.
About three or 4 hours.
Okay. Totally. Thanks for your answer.
Here's one.
Michael, I know. I mean, I've emailed the what's called the financial director. So I'm not a big fan of your current financial setups.
Who are we talking about now?
Totally.
Okay, right.
But listen, they're generating more cash, their margins are getting better, they're having more contracts, and they don't need to raise money. You know, that's what I'm saying. Morning, Justin. How have you looked at... No, I haven't looked at RGM Mines, now producing metal. I'm not a big fan of coal. I know, I have a problem sometimes with oil and gas. So coal, I'm not going down the coal route, sorry. It's just, I just think... It's the dirty.
Old. Yeah.
Dirty.
Old school.
What was your point in Hummingbird? What I'm saying is, my point in Hummingbird is they're producing gold. Gold is something you should always... I think they're undervalued at the moment, because they've had a bad couple of... They've had a run of bad news, and that's priced in. They've got cash. Of course, they raised debt to get the mine up. But the cash flow they're generating, the payback is over the next couple of years to be done. So they have no debt. They've got plenty of exploration upside, and they're producing. That's why I like Hummingbird. They're valued at, 50? They had a big drop yesterday. I don't hold Hummingbird. I just like think as a gold producer, I quite like them. And what's the share price now? Hang on. So they're 65 million market cap, and they've fallen quite a bit. I quite like them. That's what I'm saying, as a gold producer. You sell gold. I will tweet a paella when EU scoping study comes in. Yes. Well, do you know what? It's about time, isn't it?
EU's
I like Arc Minerals, Marty. I just missed the early fast rise there. Okay. Anything else? I think that's it. Oh, by the way, this made me quite laugh. You know, something Pete done was quite funny, I thought. It doesn't happen very often. But we're going out for a meal tonight, aren't we? We're going for a meal, right?
Yeah.
And Megan's arranged it. She said you can bring your own drink, so they do a corking charge. And what did she say? Is it £5?
£5 for a bottle of wine.
£1.50 for cans.
£1.50 for a can.
So £1.50 for a can, £5 for a bottle of wine. So cans, it seems expensive, £1.50 corking charge for. So Steve said, I'll bring wine. So Steve said, I'll bring wine, it's fine, I'll just bring a bottle of wine, it's fine. And then Pete came in, he said, I'll bring a can. Hey! £1.50 corking charge.
Thank you very much.
That's a bargain.
Yep.
Sweet. on that note, by all means, feel free to subscribe to the channel if you can. I do like quite doing videos, and I'm just a good-looking guy, and it suits me.
Yeah.
But subscribe below if you can, and I do try and post out once a week thoughts on stocks.
Yeah.
Generally stocks I own, because I know more about them, and I don't talk about stocks I don't own so much. Like, I don't know much about UK oil and gas, because it's not on my radar. It's too big for me, I don't look at it. But anyway, subscribe. Anything else I should say?
No, I think that's about it.
No, I think that's it.
We covered everything.
Pretty much. Mm. I think you need to go and have a cold shower.
Yeah, and you want to watch, and you.
I'm good, thanks.
Thank you very much for watching. And
I got to apologise about the graphics, by the way. They're not working correctly at the moment.
Rubbish,
so, when you see them coming in, they're not working right. So don't mention about that.
Yeah.
Just pretend it looks good.
Yeah, okay. Just use your imagination. Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate it.
Yep.
It's a nice day now. It was frosty. You know, you can go out and do something, you know, worthwhile rather than watch us
nonsense.
Good-looking chaps.
Yeah.
Subscribe, yeah. Thanks
okay.
so much.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.